internship. I worked in the Wayne County Historical Society in Lyons, New York. That was part of the requirement. You had to do that, and I did. And Dr. Jones got that for me, which I thought was wonderful. And, you know, I had good experience there. You know, we helped set up a little museum there. And it was good. Did that. Well, I left here in 67. So it was next summer, 68, did that, and then I finished my requirement up, so I got my degree then. But that part of it I didn't like. You know, and I don't know, they have made it academically more rigorous from when I was there. I mean, you know, and they've expanded it to 2 years. I don't know when that happened. It must have been in the 70s. I don't know. I don't remember. And, you know, it's much more professional than it was then. Most of the teachers, like Spinney, he was a museum director before Sturbridge came there. Dr. Buckley was a folklorist, but he was a good teacher. He was a good teacher. Pierre Goldbeck was a trained anthropologist, came here from the Southwest, you know. These were not people who were, you know, like college professors necessarily. That was not their career. They did come into this, but they didn't have any college professors who could come over here. Well, they did have a guy, Dr. Fink, came from Oneonta State, and he taught local history, but I didn't take that either. Why didn't I take that? I didn't know New York State history. Maybe I did take it. I don't think I did. It was funny because, you know, it's supposed to be part of the state university system at Oneonta. I only ever went to Oneonta once. They put us all on a bus and took us down there for the grand tour. And I said, oh, yeah, I never been to Oneonta at that time. And that was it. Never went to Oneonta State again. I mean, you know, it's all up here, which was fine, you know. But I always thought that was sort of weird. Well, they have to have the affiliation, and they do. So... No, it was interesting. It was interesting.
Did the process of sort of selective job offers ever breed contention?
I don't know. It didn't with me. I ignored it. They tried to push me somewhere, but I forget where. And I sort of had a plan by the time I was done with this, and my plan was that I would go back to Philadelphia and teach, work summers with my father in his antique business, and go that way. Then I met my wife, and that plan didn't quite go that way. But, you know, probably for the best. But anyway, you know, that was what I wanted to do. That's actually what I did. I didn't do it in Philadelphia. I did it here. I taught, and I worked in the summer on my antiques and, you know, raised my family here and everything. And that's all you can do. I mean, we had three kids, and, you know, that keeps you busy for quite a few years of your life, you know, to say the least. And, you know, which is what life is about. So there's no problem with that. And then suddenly in 1997, my son graduated from Bucknell, and I suddenly said, wait a minute, we got more time. We got more money. Where'd that come from? Oh, we're not making them big tuition payments twice a year. And, I was very lucky. My daughter went to Vassar and got enough money almost to pay a whole scholarship. And this was back in the late 80s when Vassar was $29,000, $30,000, which was a lot of money then. I don't know what it is now, but that's probably a down payment. But she walked away from college, no indebtedness, didn't own a nickel. My second daughter went to SUNY Purchase, which was a state school, which was less expensive. She walked away, no indebtedness. My son went to Bucknell, which is a very good school down in Pennsylvania, and he got a little help. He was a good thrower. He threw the disc and the hammer, and he got a little help, and he was able to get through college. That was one of my goals, to get the kids. I walked away from college with no indebtedness. And I said, I'm going to try to do that for my kids because I can't see starting life with $40,000, $50,000 in the hole. I think that's pretty hard. And so they did. Now they went, all three of them went to graduate school. Now they pay for that. So my son knows what debt is. He went to American University for 1 year and transferred to Georgetown and ended up with $93,000 debt from law school. But his first job, $125,000 the first year. You can pay that off when you're making that. I don't know what he makes now.
Yeah.
But they moved him to Singapore and paid his apartment, $5,500 a month, and everything else, and pay all his air. He always travels. Oh. His territory is India, the Pacific Rim, and San Diego. So he travels, and his home office is Washington, outside of Washington. So, but he told me he was a little tired of travel after a year and a half of that. Mm. You know, I can see why. And all I travel is in little counties around up here, and up and down every real road and looking. And I have a good friend who's done a lot of this with me, a guy named David Petrie. We traveled the roads a lot looking at stuff over the years.
Mm-hmm. Do you wish that you had traveled a little more?
No, because I haven't seen it all here. I haven't been up along the St. Lawrence very much. You know, there's other places I haven't been. I mean, we went to Scotland, I guess 3 summers ago, my wife and I. That was fun, you know. Edinburgh is a fantastic city. Old, you know, the big castle up here and the Queen's house down here and this god-awful street that goes, you know, it raises. That is some street. But the buildings there were fascinating because they were like 3-story buildings on the street, but then you get down to behind them and they're like 5 and 6 stories because they're, you know, they're, I don't know. It was a neat place. It was the first time I'd ever seen anything like the big cathedral there, the, you know, the 1300 Gothic cathedral, real thing. I enjoyed it immensely. And I like, and see again, here I am. We're out in the middle of the country. We went out to this on a bus, and then we had to walk a mile into this old castle. And we're sitting there looking, and I'm looking at the houses, and I'm looking around, and I look over here, and you know, there's a World War I monument, and there's nothing there. It's just there. And, you know, and that's sort of starting to look at it. And every place I'm looking, there's so many World War I monuments in Scotland. They must have slaughtered the Scots in World War I. And, you know, the impact of that war, it seems far greater than World War II on that country. They must have just said, anybody in Scotland, we can put in them trenches, we're putting them in there. It was really something. That really got to me over there. And I love to look at the houses and the enclosed courtyards and the farms and, you know, things like that. I was doing just what I do here. When we went, we traveled by train mostly, and it was sort of nice, you know. But that was fun. I'd go back over England again. I'd like to go to the hop country in England, down the southern part below London is where the hops, Kent, is where they grow them. I'd like to go there. And I might, you know, who knows. Tell them to give me a grant up to graduate school. By the way, do you want to know about financing?
Absolutely.
Financing was wonderful back then. They gave us scholarship. Everybody had a scholarship. If anybody paid, they were fools because they had all kinds of money. They wanted to get this thing going because I don't know what it was like the first 2 years, but they were still wanting people to come and they were giving you money, lots of money. And they discovered they were going to get more, like in December. So everybody got called in, and they gave us a little more. That was wonderful. And, of course, I told you about Mrs. Whalen. She took me under her wing, and she commenced to feed me dinner. And she even washed my clothes, made my bed, and everything. And this was all for, like, I don't know, 15, 20 bucks a week. I don't know. It was really cheap. And, you know, it was wonderful. And then if you did it right, they had a coffee break morning and afternoon, and we all chipped in and had cookies and stuff. So you'd, whether you had a class or not, you'd charge in there and get a big handful and a coffee, and you wouldn't have to buy any lunch, you know. So you might have to make a English muffin or something for breakfast. I didn't eat bagels back then. Never ate a bagel till 1996. Now I have every day. But But I had a regular routine, you know. It was great. It was fantastic. And when I left, I had $600 in the bank. Wow. After 1 year there and a degree. So that's a fairly inexpensive degree. And I didn't owe any money from college, so, you know, I started out fairly solvent. Well, I should say I did. I had a National Defense Education Act for $500 from college. But since I went into teaching and I was in an Appalachian school district in Cooperstown, it was reduced every year with no interest. So when I finally paid it off, it was like $150 or so. So, you know, I got a good cheap education. But I earned it because I got paid to play football, and, you know, I'm still paying the price for that. A little bit, not too bad, but I do. So that I'm sure that's a little different than it is today. A lot different.
Yes, quite.
But they were throwing money at the program. Well, it was just starting, and, you know, they wanted to get people come, you know, and everything, and that might have been one of the reasons I came. They must have offered me a pretty good financial, well, we didn't call them a financial package back then, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't really remember too much. The reason I didn't go to Kent State, I know what it was. You had to do a foreign language, and I'm terrible. I mean, that was the biggest waste I had to do. I went to a liberal arts college, and you had to take 2 years of a language. And I took French. Oh, man. I was awful. I was not a French student. I wanted to take Latin. I had 3 years of Latin in high school. And the guy said, well, you don't want Latin. You're a history major. You can't use Latin. Well, that's so wrong. We use Latin for everything, you know. And I said, all right, I'll take French. So I took French. First day, the lady... And this lady, she was a French woman. I don't know, they just hired her, maybe. And she comes over and she starts yabbering at me in French. And I just look at her and smile. I didn't know what she was saying. And then finally she says, Monsieur Bullard, will you open the window for me? I said, okay. And I tell you, I didn't improve much in 2 years from that. Oh, that was awful. That was just awful. That pulled my grade point average down. I guess there is a flaw. But, you know, it used to be back then, to get a master's degree in history, you had to have fluency in a foreign language. And I knew I wasn't going to ever be fluent in French. I could go over to France and die, and I don't think I'd have been fluent. You know? So that was a big negative there. But that's all right.
So, if you were starting again here in Cooperstown, mm-hmm. is there anything you would do differently?
Oh, I don't know. What would you do differently? I should have probably tried a job at a museum. You know, I should have probably tried that, but it didn't happen, you know. For many years, I kept hoping somebody would call me or knew me or something and would offer and say, hey, we got a job here, you're interested. It never happened. So, and it took me 10 years teaching to sort of figure it out and say, well, I guess I'm going to be a teacher. And after that, I just never give it a thought anymore, which was all right. I had no problem with it. I enjoyed teaching. I, you know, had good experience and in a school district that, I mean, it was probably one of the easiest places in the United States to teach. There were no major problems, you know. Kids were basically pretty good. The staff was very interconnected for many, many years. And, you know, and administrators. And after I'd been there, by the early 80s, they basically left me alone. You know, and they didn't bother me, and I liked that. I got very upset when they put me on a car and I lost my room that I had for 20 years. And I was on a cart, and that really upset me until I did it for a year. And I said, yeah, best thing ever happened to me. I got to know the other teachers better. And I had science teachers who would stay in their room and listen to the history talks, you know. And that's the way it was. My thought about teaching is not like a lot of people. A lot of people like to spend a lot of time on how do you teach and, you know, that kind of thing. My idea was, what do you teach? And I'm a reader, and I've always been a reader, and I never stopped studying. And it always bothered me that some of my colleagues graduated from college, and that was it. They didn't keep studying. You know, I'm still studying, still learning, and getting in. I get into a period, and I read books on it. And then, you know, we never taught wars in New York State. The Regents curriculum, you don't have to teach about Civil War, Revolution. You don't have to teach about that stuff. So I'm a late bloomer on the Civil War. You know, I've really only gotten into that in the last 10 years or so. You know, and that's just the way I work. And I've always thought I don't know what I would do if I couldn't read anymore, you know, because That really bothered me with my grandkids, because I was afraid they wouldn't read. But they took the books like a hog to slops. They love to read, you know. So I'm pleased with that, you know. But all I ever read was history. And my mother started a library in our elementary school when I was in elementary school, and I read was biographies of famous people and that kind of stuff, you know. Fourth, fifth, sixth grade, you know, and that's, I never stopped reading that kind of stuff. Though I was tempted once by flowers and plants. I thought for a while I would have liked to go into ornamental horticulture, greenhouse work, and that kind of thing. But my father informed me there was no money in that, which was not exactly right, but a lot of hard work. But so I didn't do that. Yeah, but you know, I used to have kids in school, and they had their whole life planned out in high school. And I've seen several of them like this. I had no clue, you know. I would have never gone to college if it hadn't been for my high school football coach. He called up a coach up at Lebanon Valley, and who had been the captain of one of his undefeated teams back in '48, and you know, they set it up. And I went up there, and he says, well, I says, well, what have we got to do for an application? He says, you mail it to me, and we'll take care of it. And that was that. So I went to college. Now, you know, it's funny. Well, you think you've got a lot of experience, but you're only beginning. And when you get, you know, and I thought that way, too. You know, everybody does. And you've had other people tell you that. But it's an interesting thing if you make it to, I'm 69 now, and just 69. But you certainly, you look back and you reflect on things, and it's interesting how things go along, you know, and what happens. And I guess you're lucky if you get to live that long and, you know. See, I have a nice house. I own 25, 30 acres here and enjoy myself. So that's what more can you ask for, you know. But this did have a big influence on me, and it influenced my teaching immensely, always. I always, you know, tried to bring in the human factor, the way people lived and that kind of thing. And it had a big influence, yeah, no question about it.
That's good.
Yeah. If it's good, bad, it is. I'm very fatalistic, as you can see. Things are, they are. So what are you going to do? You know, you can fight it, or you can say, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would really like to thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, about an hour, 25 minutes, that ain't bad.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. It'd be interesting to see how my interview meshes in with some of the people that were there when I was there.
Okay.
Because I've been around people, and they oh, this was the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me. Oh, we did so much and we worked so hard. And I think, I missed something. You know, I had a little bit different experience. But I mean, but the work was fun. I enjoyed it. You know, it's not work if you really, really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I've never been the person who said you have to love your job. I always felt, you know, you got to eat, you got to pay the bills, so you got to work. You know, and that's sort of my approach. But if you like it, better, that's good. You know, see, now I have two antique shops. I'm a pastor at two churches, and that keeps me very much involved, and able to help a lot of people. And you know, that's good, and I enjoy that immensely. And, you know, the only time I really was uncomfortable was when I first started to teach. And that first year, I had a hard time, but a lot of people do.
What made it so difficult?
Oh, they threw me in with, I was teaching eighth grade, and they threw me in with five, almost, students. Some, many of those students would have been in special education today, and they weren't then. And some of them, they drove to school in eighth grade. You know, these people, I never met people who didn't want to learn, really. And it just blew my mind that there were kids there that all they were doing was occupying a seat till they were 16. And there were a lot of them in that school. This was in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Interesting school district because it had what the War College was there. So they had kids from, you know, these were lieutenant colonels, and the, really smart people, smart families, motivated kids. They had working class kids. Then they had what they called the hillbillies. Now, these were people who had moved in. Carlisle was right on the edge of where the Appalachian Mountains began. They moved into the city there, and those people didn't give a hoot about nothing. And they had a significant number of blacks there. And it was an odd, an interesting combination back then. And I was teaching the year that Martin Luther King got shot. And the day he got shot, and to this day, I don't know why they did this. I thought it was the stupidest thing. I thought it then, and I believe it now. They dismissed all the black students from the school. They were afraid of something was going to happen. And, you know, that was absolutely the wrong thing to do because parents aren't home. You know, this was like middle of the day. And it was really strange. But there was only a very one or two small incidents in Carlisle, though places like Baltimore and Harrisburg, which aren't too far away, were they had problems. But that was not a good year. Not a good year at all. And then I came up here and that was much better. You know, as much I the first faculty, for about the second or third faculty meeting up here, I guess it was. These old ladies are up there. And these kids are awful and everything. And I started laughing. They didn't know what they were talking about. I had to knock a girl down in Carlisle. She come after me, and I literally had to push her down in the chair. You know, and you don't have things like that happen up here. And that could have really been the end of my teaching business if it had been happened today, because she was a black girl. But she was nasty, and she was coming after me, you know, and I just put her down in the chair like that and say, you sit in that chair and don't get up, and that was that. But that's the kind of people they had there, and they paddled them, and they had a vice principal, and his job was to paddle kids, and he had this big wooden paddle up there, and I'll tell you, he walked down the hall, it was like Moses parting the Red Sea. He was a feared man. He was a big dude, too. He actually had known my high school football coach, and they played together at Westchester State, and he was a lineman. He was a big man. Oh, well. That has nothing to do with this stuff.
Okay.
But it's sort of interesting. It's one of those things you remember. But, you know, all the years after you get into a job and it becomes routine, I can't differentiate years. For years and years, you know, 1976, 1982, 1985, I don't know. you know, it was such a routine. And I was telling my daughter the other day, you know, I can remember them in high school because they rode up to me and went to high school. But when they were young, we had three kids, and it's very hard to differentiate for me. I'm maybe most people don't have this problem, but you know, I remember things we did, but I can't say, well, we did this in 1974. You know, I don't know. Just well, you weren't even here in 1974, were you? When were you born?
89.
Well, my oldest daughter graduated 87. So you were young in the glorious years of the 90s. The 90s were good years. You'd get your receipt from your investment and you'd say, oh my God, 35% increase. What have I done to deserve that? I don't care. you don't get that anymore. Yeah. But, you know, financially it was interesting. I compare the 90s to the 20s. In the 1920s, there were new technologies that drove the economy, like the automobile and such, and radio and so forth. And in the 1990s is where you get the internet and then computers coming in. And they had that explosion, that, you know, internet bubble or computer bubble in the 90s that mm-hmm. burst right, you know, at the end of Bill Clinton's years. And that, I think there's a comparison there. But, you know, I like the 1920s was one of my favorite decades. I like that, and I like Jacksonian America. Yeah. And my son's name is Daniel Andrew Jackson Bullard. I named him after Jackson, and we call him Andy. And he Jackson, when I was in college, was hailed as one of the great presidents of America. Today he's vilified and looked down on. That was, you know, and it's crazy, you know. You take out of context what he did. But, you know, that's the thing people don't understand with history. It's always being rewritten. And they say, oh, you're changing it. No, you're not changing it. You're just reinterpreting it. And I have a friend, oh, he's afraid to write anything down because people will take it wrong. And I said, well, if you don't write it down, they won't take anything. You know, and don't get old and tight like I am. Then you can't get up and you got to kick your leg out. And I tell you, it's fun to be there.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.